Hi, it is Diane, and it is Tuesday, May 23rd. I'm here with the Noon Group. So far, we have Kieran and Lori and Jennifer. Let's start with check-ins and celebrations. Who wants to go first?
This is Lori. I can go first. We had a good, peaceful weekend, I think, and somewhat due to the fact that I just had a minor foot surgery and could not walk, and therefore my daughter, Lily, who's just turned 14, you know, basically had to step up, and she did, which means that she's able to do it when there's a little bit of empathy, perhaps, or will. So we had a good weekend, and looking forward, we have one more week of school, and then she graduates. She's in eighth grade, so she graduates on the 31st, so big changes, but...
Well, and I love the way you said that, Lori, because it's kind of like, if you know that empathy is a motivator for her, that's a great awareness. And so it's, you know, kind of how do you figure out, you know, how to either have a conversation about that or how to, you know, help her to use that tool kind of moving forward to help her to motivate her brain differently. Okay. And are you feeling better?
I can now I can walk. I have a boot on for a couple more weeks, but hopefully. Just from the Achilles. It takes forever to heal.
Okay, cool. Who's got the dog in the background? I'll let you check in next, and then we'll put you on mute.
That's me. That's Karen. I actually just shut the door.
Okay, go ahead,
hopefully
Karen.
You won't be able to have to hear them anymore. There must be someone walking by. So this is Karen, and I guess what I'm celebrating is that I'm actually taking the time to be part of this call again. I don't think I've been on a call in months, and I'm just trying to, the dogs are following the dog that's walking across the street, so I'm going to go downstairs. So I'm just celebrating that I am back into the swing of things and making an effort to be part of this program, which I had been finding very valuable, but just, I don't know, crazy life got in my way of doing something that's really important. So.
Awesome. Well, we're glad you're back. We missed you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
And I see Kathy just joined. So Jennifer and Jennifer, can you want to go ahead and check in, and then we'll have Kathy check in last.
Check in. I think I'm just like, was it Lori that just went? Just
Karen.
Happy
yeah.
to be.
Karen.
Oh, Karen. Yeah. Just happy to be back and try, you know, focus and get back into it. You know, now that my son's finishing school or ending the school year.
Awesome. Cool. Kathy, what about you?
I'm doing the same way. My son just got back from college and first summer, so the dynamics are a little more involved. And so I'm glad to be having a process to move forward with, to think about parenting, especially when it's sort of full-time.
I'm having just a little bit of a trouble hearing you, Kathleen. So if you could, I don't know whether it's your phone or whether it's your connection, but.
Okay, let me move. I'm feeling, is this better?
Yes, it is. Thank you so much.
Okay. I'm feeling the same way, just to be glad to be back on the phone call. My son is back from college for the summer, and so. Having three teenagers, again, seen full-time, just feels good to make sure I have consistent support.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. Well, and so I'm going to celebrate, and I said this before everybody got on, but yesterday was my son's last day at school and his last final, and I think we passed everything. I shouldn't say that. I think he passed everything. And graduation is on Saturday, and it's very exciting and very it's been a really stressful spring for all of us. Just to let you guys know that we go through the same sorts of stuff at our house that you guys go through too. So I'm celebrating that, and it really went much more smoothly than I could have ever imagined, given how kind of stressful it could have been. So I'm celebrating that with all of you. So. Let's loop back around and figure out where everybody wants to take aim for our conversation today. Karen, you want to start us?
Um, To be honest with you, I'm not really even sure where I want to take aim at this point. Everything seems a little topsy-turvy right now, I guess. My son is 16 and was diagnosed a couple of years ago with ADHD. And I guess what's the most difficult thing for me right now is he seems like he's, I don't know if he seems like he's angry or he's just super annoyed. Neither my husband nor I can say or do anything right at this particular moment. So, for example, this morning, my husband said something as simple as, "Hey, you know, when are you going to get your hair cut?" "Oh, my gosh, why are you always telling me what to do?" Blah, 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 screaming and really overreacted, in my opinion, to one simple question. But obviously there's something else that's going on, so yes, I need to get curious. But when I try to get curious, he just doesn't feel like talking, and he just shuts down on me. So that's
hard because it's like my instinct is, and I don't know what yours is, Karen, but his stress level's up. It's probably what's going on. Does that resonate?
His stress, yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of times when we want to get curious with our kids and they shut down, the tip that I like to use is just come up with three things on your own. So what are three things that could be going on for him right now?
Well, I think he's stressed out because he wants to do well this semester, and he's shooting to get all A's and B's.
Okay, what else?
So that, I think he, we've been talking to him about, you know, he needs to make some plans for the summer because he is not going to just, you know, sit home all day, every day, and do nothing.
Right.
So I think summer plans, you know, could probably be a little stressful for him because he doesn't know what he wants to do for a job and so on and so forth. And then the other one, without getting too personal, is he got in a little bit of trouble at school. And so it wasn't academic. It was more social. So
yeah.
He's very stressed out about that.
So you were pretty easily able to come up with three things that are really stressful for him, and
mm-hmm.
which is cool. So if you know that what's really going on is that your son's stress level is up, how
yeah.
does that help you to see the annoying behavior in a different light?
Yeah, yeah. And I actually just read what you guys talked about 2 weeks ago, I think it was, or, you know, and just how difficult it is for, I forgot what the term is, like complex kids, you know, they take everything very, very much to heart. And I think even just little things that we say right now is just going to send him over the top. So I think what my focus is going to be is at least, you know, just to try day by day to not criticize and not tell him what to do, and just try to maybe just have fun with him. You know.
Well, it sounds like so. Let's roll you back a level. And so, what the change you want to see is so rather than taking aim on a potential solution, I'm going to encourage you to take aim on a challenge. So, is it how to best support him when his stress level is high? Is that what I'm getting from you? Or is there something else a different way you would say that?
Actually, that would be helpful, yes.
Okay. Awesome. All right, who else?
That's perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Lori, where do you want to take aim?
Yep. Get me to go. This is Lori. I can.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm not sure if you said somebody's name, but, well, it's just so interesting that the topic for this week is kind of dealing with executive functioning and looking at the process, because I want to check in on my response to my daughter's poor executive functioning, particularly, you know, for years we've been working on the daily planner or kind of putting down homework but more importantly, tests and things, and tried all different things with her, I thought, buying into her way. Well, last week she didn't have any homework for multiple days, and I thought, oh, okay, that's kind of odd, because usually at the end of, and I even asked her, I said, usually at the end of the year, there's always a test or projects, and she says no. And the other night, or like the 5 o'clock, I heard upstairs this tape, and I thought, what is she doing? I said, what are you making? And I went upstairs, and she was making science flashcards. So she had a piece of paper. She would write the science and then the definition, and she was taking scotch tape and, like, laminating them, okay? So, and I thought, all right, and I'm like, what are you doing? She says, well, I have a test tomorrow. And I just blew up because, first of all, you know, it's all these thoughts without thinking, without pausing, was like, okay, one, you know, you lied to me multiple times about our test. You know, poor use of time. If the test is actually tomorrow, you're doing these laminates. So all these awful judgments. And so I totally overreacted. And then I walked away, and then I came back and said, you know, I talked to her. I said, I just reacted out of fear. And, you know, yeah, at least you're doing something, but again. So I would just like to, there's my dog. One second. Alex, I'm on the phone, okay? If you can take the dog. All right. I have a dog walker that's with my, because of my foot. Anyway, so I just want to figure out how I can cool down in that moment and just, you know, the bright thing is she was working on it. The you know, thing that bothers me is that it was, the night before.
Yeah. Well, and I love your self-awareness. You know, it's Lori, I want to challenge you to celebrate just how big of a step it is to focus in on this for you. When you reflect on kind of some of the, you know, how you would have reacted to this, you know, 6 months ago or wherever else. I mean, you've made an enormous amount of progress in focusing on this stuff and to be able to go, okay, I want to look at this different. I want to not get triggered. I want to not respond from fear, which is a really normal place for all of us to respond because that fear button is enormous, right? I don't know how old you are. My fear button is 54 years old. And so it gets pushed pretty easily. But I think that that's exciting. And so what I hear that you want to focus in on is your response when your daughter's executive function challenges show up. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Good. Yes.
So. Okay. Jennifer or Kathy?
I like the topic this week of, you know, it's the process, not the achievement. I was just online looking at home access for the grades. I'm like, great, teachers posted final grades for today. Yay, he passed. And it's like, okay, I've got to remember, if he doesn't pass, you know, it's the process that, you know, not the outcome. It's, you know.
So if you were going to, pick one area, you know, is it about his grades and your reaction to his grades? Is it about his homework? I mean, where do you want to really focus as you think about this topic this week?
Probably his grades. And while he most likely will pass all of his classes, some of them just barely, it's the process of how he got there and how he could have done better, but it's the executive function skills that hold him back.
Right. So what I'm hearing is that you want to take aim on your reaction to his grades and particularly where his executive function is impacting those.
Right.
Okay, great. All right, Kathy, what about you? I just called you Kathy. You may go by Kathleen, and I'm calling you the wrong thing.
Sorry, I had to get my phone off of mute. Kathy is fine.
Oh, okay.
And where I want to focus on is how to mediate or navigate when my daughter is rude to my other daughter. It's really hard to have compassion in the moment if she's just getting away and my other daughter's yesterday. So she is. So my 16-year-old daughter is often not responsive. She does have ADD. She's, but particularly with my 14-year-old daughter, she's just rude or just has issues. We're in the middle of considering a transfer for 11th and 12th grade to a small all-girls school. So she and I and her sister have had a lot of time together recently because her sister will start at another small all-girls school in the fall. And just trying to, it's easier for me, for myself, if she's mean to me or if she's not following through, blah, blah, blah. But I'm not sure how to mediate that for my daughter, my youngest daughter, with whom I have a really good relationship. So I sort of take up her cause, so to speak.
So how does it feel to say that you want to take aim on how to handle their challenging interactions? Does that feel like the right way to frame that for you, Kat?
Yes, although I recognize it doesn't have anything to do with executive functioning skills.
Can I challenge that? Because a lot of times our kids' rude behavior is directly related to executive function challenges.
Oh, sure, yeah, that would be fun.
Does that resonate?
Say again?
How does that resonate for you as I say that?
Like it's impossible to do it in the way that I want to do it.
Say that again. I didn't hear what you said.
It resonates as, when I think about it, it feels all-encompassing. And when you say that, it feels like less, do you know what I mean? Like less of a ginormous trigger in my heart. So I'm not sure that it's really reflective of how much I, you know, mentally lose it. But objectively, I think that's right.
So it's hard for you to really swallow that? Tell me, is that what you mean?
It's hard for me to think it's just challenging behavior and not like, she's a monster, or why this again, or just tough it out for two more years.
So what is it that makes it harder to think that it's an executive function challenge?
Because it seems like an attitudinal thing.
It doesn't seem logical. When we look at rude behavior and it feels like rude behavior. And what often happens to us when we see rude behavior is our mindset becomes, this has to stop, this can't be happening, I'm going to put my foot down. Which, for most of us, doesn't always work effectively with our kids, because what's really going on is our kids are having a hard time behaving in a kind way because of impulse control, because of them being triggered, because of, you know, whatever it is. And I think that this is the thing, is that whenever we're triggered, our executive function is impacted. Period. I mean, that's what happens. You get triggered, and that part of your brain shuts down, whether you're ADHD or not. And so if you're dealing with a child who's triggered, they've got an executive function deficit in that moment.
I thought executive function had more to do with, like, scheduling and knowing what should happen and working a plan? Am I not like moving?
So there's six areas of executive function, and I can post the link to the exercise that we did. I can't remember which week we did it in, Kathy, but it's if you want, I'm happy to post it in Facebook if you can't find it. But there's, you know, emotion management, impulse control, you know, it's all both of those. I mean, just being able to regulate your emotions is a huge executive, knowing when to, you know, managing overreaction, managing underreaction can be a hard time too. So it's like when you get a snarky kid who's like, I don't care, you know, they feel like they have no empathy at all. That's an executive, that can be an executive function deficit. But the reality is that, and then our ability to problem solve is really the bottom line, is that when our kids are having conflict, we need them to figure out how to be able to work it out. And if that part of their brain is shut down because they're triggered, their ability to really problem solve and figure out how to work it out with their sibling in this instance is very limited.
How often do you notice that? Helpful. But I have ADD too, and even medicated, although mostly it happens once my meds have waned because after school is whatever. How do I do that for myself to not be triggered and be blocked?
Yeah, no, trigger management is it. You know, the tip is get calm, help calm, hold calm. And I would tell you that around here, job number one is calm. And if everybody's not calm, then everything stops until we try to get calm, you know, and we work together and you partner together. And I've got clients who spend weeks and weeks and weeks and months just focusing on trigger management because it's not easy. Tempers flare. And so I would encourage you to go back. There's a couple of things I could suggest. There's a webinar we did on yelling. The week we did in PSS where we talked about trigger management would be a good one to go back and listen to. But I would tell you that I've got a lot of people who are doing private coaching just to figure out how to handle trigger management in their family and really kind of roll up their sleeves and make some significant changes. And if that's something that appeals to you at all, I'm happy to kind of chat with you a little bit about that.
Sure.
So I'm going to talk about the topic in just a second because I think everybody's taking aim, but one of the things that I want to remind us all of is the role that compassion plays and that whole ACE process, because I think it's an underlying theme for all of us, especially when we're dealing with teens. If we start with compassion, if we start with understanding, if we give our kids space to feel what they're feeling and, you know, give them room to be upset about something, give them room to be frustrated about something, give them room to be confused, whatever they're feeling, and kind of focus on them and what's going on for them, it can really help us to get then to the next place, which is, okay, so what do we do about it? How do we focus on solving some of the executive function deficits? How do we focus on, you know, changing some of the behaviors and improving some of the situations? So I just... a gentle reminder for the compassion module that we did however many weeks ago, because it's such a key thing all the time to remember. So we are on page 54 of the workbook, talking about focusing on the process, not the achievement. And this is a great topic for this time of year because we're getting so close to the end of the semester. I mentioned earlier that we are literally at the last days here. We're doing final exams, that sort of thing. And it's really easy to get caught up in the end zone and not on the success. And so for a great example is my daughter who gets really to 16, and she gets really focused on, you know, what's that grade that I got? You know, did I get a B? Did I get an A? And what this would suggest is, you know, how well did you do spending time studying for each of your finals? You know, did you feel good? You know, did you feel confident when you went into them? Did you spend, you know, whatever? If your goal was to spend a half an hour every day studying for each exam, were you able to hit that goal, or what got in the way? You know, really kind of looking at not you know, not what happens at the end of the finish line, but really kind of looking at all the steps in between. And I think that the other piece of this that becomes really important is with regard to motivation. And a lot of times what we'll try to do as parents of teenagers is to use, like, end of semester grades and, you know, getting into the college of your choice and some of these other sorts of things which are further out as motivators. And the reality is, particularly when our kids are stressed, their ability to think forward about the future or even think about a motivation that would happen next week. So you say, well, just, you know, if you can get this done, I hear this all the time. It's like, if you get it done now, you won't have to worry about it next week when, you know, when you're busy studying for your finals. Let's just get it done now. Our kids have a difficult time thinking about anything other than now. And so that's why this whole idea of really focusing on the process can be helpful, because they're not even able a lot of times to really go to that endpoint or go to the future and look at anything other than what's happening right now. And so I think that if we can focus on the achievement, wow, you did a really great job studying tonight, how do you feel? That can be really helpful because it gives them a sense of motivation, a sense of success. I love that here it says again, success breeds success. We always say that. You know, the more we focus and celebrate with our kids, rather than going, well, it's great that you're done with your math, but you've got science now. You know, it's every time we add that but, and we do it all the time, it mitigates, you know, the successes that they do have. You know, so if you guys started with celebrations today and you know, Karen, you said, I'm excited to be back. And if I would have gone, yeah, but you weren't here last week, so, you know, you got to get going on this thing. How often do we do that to our kids? And so, again, it's that kind of focusing on what's working, focusing on the process, rather than kind of being so end zone focused. So what comes up for all of you guys around this topic of focusing on the process?
That's exactly me. It's like, great, you did a good job studying, but you've got, you know, three other classes to study for. And I sometimes wish I just would learn how to shut my mouth sooner than keep going.
So what do you think makes it hard to shut your mouth? That's a great observation.
I think part, how I grew up, you know, I wasn't by any means a complex kid as my son is, but I also knew the rules, and we better not have gotten anything less than an 80%. So it's hard to, you know, think, well, gosh, I didn't have any problem studying. Why can't he study?
Well, and it makes perfect sense because you had to follow the rules, and that was kind of the way you were raised. What's the true answer to the question you just asked? Why can't he just study?
Because his executive function skills doesn't allow it. His ADHD doesn't allow it. You know, that he's, you know, okay, I want a break, I want to do something else. And I think sometimes he still thinks that he doesn't have to worry about it because he's going to be passed along like he's always been passed along in classes.
So you were focused on the executive function for a minute, and then the voice that says he's just lazy creeped in. Can I say it that bluntly? Is that fair?
Yeah. But okay. I think for him, because I don't think that he's just going to get passed along. I think he's thinking it. That, oh, I'm just going to get passed along again.
Well, so it's possible that he might have that fleeting thought. What else might be true?
that he just needs a break. You know, that he can't grasp it all. You know, that he has to have breaks.
Right. So it sounds like you can really hear both sides of it, right? So you can hear the part of you that really gets that this is executive function. It's the naughty versus neurological showing up in the middle of it, right? So it's kind
right.
of like, yeah, maybe he has these fleeting thoughts. And maybe, I mean, a lot of times our kids will even say that because they've heard it from somebody else. I was talking to an eighth grader in my carpool the other day, and he's like, I'm just lazy. And I looked at him, I'm like, you are not a lazy kid. You are one of the smartest kids I know, and you are really dedicated and you know, brilliant. And he's like, but he had heard this voice about lazy, and so he had created this story about himself that he must be lazy. And so those voices get really loud, and I think that the question I want to ask is, you know, how do we handle it when those voices show up? So, you want to play with this a little bit?
I don't know. I keep struggling with it.
Okay. So so what's the voice you struggle with? You were talking about the fact that you follow the rules. You were brought up to follow the rules. You know that it's hard for him to follow the rules. Is the voice in your head say, it's not fair? Does the voice in your head say, oh, come on, this is so much more work than I signed up for? Does the voice in your head say, well, is this never going to end? What's the voice in your head say?
Why can't he just do it? You know,
okay.
What's the problem?
All right, so when the voice in your head says, why can't he just do that? On a scale of 0 to 10, how triggered do you get? 0 being not triggered, 10 being completely triggered.
5, 6. 6.
So it really escalates you pretty quickly because you're like, I can't believe this is happening. I don't understand why you can't just do this. I had to do it. He should have to too. All those other things kind of show up in your head. How does it, and when that happens, how effective are you at supporting him in getting stuff done?
I think sometimes it's just like I just give up because it's like, okay, he's not going to do it. He's not going to get it. Why am I pushing him?
Great. And that's pretty normal. When we get triggered, we go to fight or flight. And you kind of go to flight, which is why should I bother? It's never going to change. He's never going to be able to do this. I'm going to throw in the towel. Is that
what
I'm hearing?
Yeah, and I hate that because I know he can do so much better.
Right, and then you get angry and frustrated, and you're like, I don't want to have that mindset, and you kind of get, and you get, you know, intense maybe on the other end is what I'm hearing. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you think is the most effective way to support your son in that moment?
I think I just need to say, okay, let's both of us take a break and, you know, you're not done, but let's take a break and then regroup and come back in, you know, 30 minutes and look at what else we need to do.
Okay.
You know, what else?
So what you're doing is you're giving you both a brain break. You're still focused on the process, which is you want to get it done. And you can see that it's not as effective to try to get it done when one or both of you is triggered.
Right.
So what would it take to become a little bit more aware of the dynamic and begin to remember to do that more often?
I don't know. You'd think after going through this for so many years, I would.
Those trigger buttons, again, so many years, right? So those buttons are enormous. That why can't he just is enormous. So if you can take a deep, if you can take a deep breath into why can't he just, every time you notice that voice in your head, why can't he just, take a deep breath, take a sip of water, take a quick breather, and find something to replace that with. You want a new thought rather than why can't he just. So what do you tell that voice in your head?
He's not me. He's not, he's different.
So is there a subtle difference to it? Because what's just popping into my head was, instead of why can't he just, it's like, I wish he could just, and it's hard for him. Or I wish he was more like me, and he's not.
Right.
It's not. You aren't going all the way to the Pollyanna. Oh, he's got executive function challenges, and I have complete compassion for it. I mean, it might be a long way for that for you. I mean, and it is for a lot of us. So it's, what's the in-between step that you are willing to consider as a replacement thought?
I don't know. I guess I'm not there yet. But I need to get there, because otherwise the next 2 years in school is going to be hard.
So are you saying that you don't believe that it's executive function, and that you really still do believe that he's just not trying hard enough?
No, I do. I definitely believe he has executive function deficiencies.
Yeah.
I think it's more that I need to read up more, and I've read so much, but put things in place that may help him. I mean, I started the school year with all sorts of great ideas that, we're going to do this, this, and this, and, try and get you, set up for success. But then it didn't happen. And I think
can I interrupt you for a second? Because here's the thing. When you're triggered, it's not going to happen. I mean, that's the reality. It's like if you're why can't he just, and like most of us are a lot of times, your ability to go, okay, I want to do this or I want to do that, we become very solution focused because we've got to fix it. And here's the thing is that the work is, I've got to shift the mindset first. And so the tip I want to teach you is neuroplasticity. Have you heard that phrase before?
I think so.
So neuroplasticity is about what our brain latches onto. And so we've created this pattern where, and I'm just going to use yours as an example, and then I'm going to open it up to everybody else. If your pathway in your brain says, why can't he just, and you've been saying that over and over and over and over again, it's almost like you dig a rut in your brain that goes from, I see a behavior, to, I say, why can't he just. And it's like the visual I have is like a wagon wheel in a muddy road where it just gets really deep, because that you say that over and over and over again, and the brain, the pathway just connects. And so what we've got to do is kind of pick up our wagon and put it in a new thought process. So when we see the behavior, we say, wow, he's having executive function challenges right now, instead of saying, why can't he just? And half of the work, in all honesty, is just recreating that pathway and replacing the thought. Because when we replace the thought, it gets us out of triggered mode and gets us into problem-solving mode, where you can do all those cool things that you said you wanted to do to help him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the work becomes replacing the thought and taking the deep breath. And so I don't know if that's for you, if it's the mantra or if it's a post-it note or whatever it is, but there's lots of cool tools that you can use to kind of create a replacement thought for yourself.
Right.
How interested would you be in taking that on?
Very, because I think now, or between Thursday and the beginning of August, summer break would be the time to replace my thoughts and get things in place to help him, you know, be successful, but get things, oh, okay, well, let's try it this way. You know, already have the examples ready and ready to go when I'm feeling that way.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to open it up to the rest because I took us down a rabbit hole, but I think it was a good rabbit hole, and I appreciate the rest of you guys for kind of playing with us here. But I want to open it back up to this conversation about process versus outcome, and feel free to talk about this whole thing with the triggers and the neuroplasticity. But I'm kind of curious as what's coming up with it for everybody else on this topic today.
Well, I appreciate the conversation you guys had, because this neuroplasticity thing for me is, that's the whole thing, replacing my thought. And maybe, you know, for my case with this, when I look back at what just happened last week and I blew up, boy, if I could just have stepped away, I think I physically have to put distance to cool down. And then I could think, rather than, gosh, why can't she just do this, to she's having executive functioning challenges, and then breathe, and then. But I think that one of the challenges, especially with teens, is getting buy-in. I mean, we're always proposing a solution, but working together to come up with it. And the challenge that I have is that my daughter it's difficult for her to communicate. And so sometimes when I try to ask her these open-ended questions, she comes back with, I don't know. And then I sit there like it's dusted, to just bite my lip and see what she comes up with, and we sit in silence, and then I try to come up with another sentence. So I think the process, it's great reviewing the process, and I totally get it, because hopefully by reviewing the process, it will affect the end. But sometimes I have, okay, yes, great, you just finished your science, aren't you pleased that you've done a good job, and you pause, then you can say, so how do you say, okay, now you got to move on to the next subject. So
yeah.
Sometimes it's a challenge in that, and it's a challenge when you're someone, a kid that doesn't communicate, but you know in order for it to be successful, they got to buy into it. So,
yeah. Well, and I think that there's some baby steps in there, right? So it's helpful to really look at that. There's actually a blog that I wrote, Lori, called What to Do When My Kid Says I Don't Know, that I would point you to if you haven't. But it's about kind of creating enough space to be able to let that happen. You know, it can be difficult to do when you're triggered and you're worried about getting stuff done, right? Other thoughts? What's going through your head right now, guys?
So for me, this is Karen. My son does all of his homework at school. So I don't really ever have an opportunity to talk with him much about his schoolwork, or, you know, I'll say, how's everything going? And he'll say, fine. And I'll try to ask some questions about, well, what project are you working on and when is it due? And he doesn't really engage in those types of conversations with me. He's on an IEP plan. So he goes into school every morning at 7:30, whether he has class at that time or not. And he does his homework in his learning center, you know, in the morning before school starts. And then he has learning center three times a cycle. So I never really get to talk with him about, you know, trying to figure out the process, because he just sort of does it on his own. So I guess that's what's coming up for me. It's like I'm not really sure what I can add to this conversation.
Well, so you're, I guess the question is there another aspect of, you know, life besides schoolwork where kind of focusing on the process rather than the outcome could help you, Karen?
Well, he's sort of a, I don't want to say he's lame, but he doesn't really, right now he's not really doing much after school. He does track, and that's over, but when he was involved in track, I mean, in terms of the process, he was, you know, good with going after school and following the directions and, you know, improving his time, because he did more of a speed versus a distance racing. And so in terms of, you know, following a process to improve his skill set with his running, you know, he did a good job with that. But again, it's something that someone else is really coaching him on. I would just go to the meets and watch him and say, wow, you did a great job. How did you do that? And questions about it. But he, for those things, I guess he seems more either internally motivated or just motivated by his coaches or his teachers or, I'm sort of at a loss.
Yeah, no, and it makes it hard.
Yeah, so I'm sort of at a loss of how I can contribute. So I guess that's why I'm not really saying much of anything.
No, and that's fine. So I guess I would challenge you, Kathy, to kind of go back and see, you know, just kind of pay attention to this topic over the next couple of weeks and see what comes mm-hmm. up. And maybe that you kind of go, oh, wow, this would be a great place to use that. And maybe it's something you can teach him. If he becomes very focused on the outcome, it might be a tool that he could begin to use in those moments that it's hard for him to kind of not get caught up in the end note.
Yeah. Okay. So that's good.
Cool. Other thoughts before we wrap up here?
I actually just somehow hung up and then just called again, so I missed the last bit of it, but I've been trying to apply the what thought can I change idea. And I'm wondering if you have suggestions, because I don't think that I can think she must be having executive functioning skills in a compassionate way when she's being rude, particularly to someone else.
So that kind of gets back to that conversation I was having with earlier, which is, you know, it's a long way from my kids being rude to I have complete compassion because my child has executive function skills. So can I share the phrase that I use and it might help you?
Please.
I say, my child is having a hard time showing respect right now. So I can't get to why without going, like, you know, it doesn't matter why. Ultimately, the reality is it's probably because of executive function challenges. But right now, they're having a hard time being polite. And if somebody's having a hard time with something, our ability to help them is very different than if I think they're being rude. So what would change for you if you said something like, it's hard for her right now?
I like the idea of thinking about respect because then it makes me think about being respectful too. And reminds me that it's a value. But,
you just added a but. What's the but? It was a big old but, too.
I'm trying to figure out how to also, so if my other daughter, like I don't want to just say that to my other daughter and expect that she just has to deal with it or that it's an excuse. And I'm trying to figure out how to either, I guess I immediately go to problem solving and figuring out what can she say or who can say what that would help rather than just observing it and accepting it and tried to give people space.
Well, so it sounds like what you're grappling with is it, does it make it okay? Does it make the behavior okay when I do this? Is that what I'm getting underneath this?
I don't want my 16-year-old to think it's okay.
Right. So the point here is not that the behavior is okay. The point is that it's hard to change the behavior if you're fighting it versus whether you're addressing it. And so, yes, you're right. Unkind words are still unkind. And the goal is to ultimately help behaviors change. And the reality is that if, let's just pretend that it's triggers, right? So if you've got a kid who's triggered, their ability to speak kindly is very limited. And so what you focus on is trigger management, not on kind words. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's helpful.
Because you may still have consequences. You know, there are plenty, and I know you know everybody decides this differently, but it may still be, you know, that if you hit your brother, you still have to go to timeout. It doesn't mean that, you know, I don't understand that you're not hitting because you're a bad kid. You're hitting because you have poor impulse control. It may be significant enough that you still want to have a consequence for it, and you want to address it and support it and figure out how to really help the behavior to change and not just punish it.
So is the trigger management for me or for her or for both or for all?
It sounds like for both. Am I getting that wrong or is that fair?
I think it would help me and it might help Kate. I don't know that it would help my youndest daughter.
Well, I would
so
tell
I
you that
at our house,
we worked on it together because it became a family project. And it was something like, okay, for the next month, we're going to work on triggers, regardless of whose it is. And here's, you know, how can we work together? How can we help each other? And that was something that was really appealing because it was like we were all taking aim as a family. And my kids loved that they could help me manage my triggers as much as I could help them manage theirs.
I have a really
have a
hard
question.
Time imagining Kate would care or be interested in doing anything as a family that's cerebral.
Well, and that may be the case.
But maybe it's something the rest of us can take on. For better or for worse.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks.
Cool.
So I have a question as it relates to this. What ideas, you know, would you suggest for consequences for, you know, a 16-year-old or however old, you know, not speaking kindly to their sibling? Like, you know, I don't know, I'm just, sometimes I struggle with consequences for my teenagers. I can't just put
it
in.
Well, I think it depends, there was a while whenever my kids said anything unkind, they had to say three nice things. So it's kind of like, okay, dude, that wasn't nice. Say three nice things about your sister. You know, that sort of kind of redirection.
Okay. That's what I was
coming
up with. Kind of
awareness.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. So I want to honor your time and do our wrap up real quick because we're bumping up against the time here. On page 55, the four questions we answer at the end. What did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's an aha that I had? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success with this action? So take a few minutes, jot down some notes, and I would love to hear at least an aha and a next step for everybody.
Well, this is Lori. I can go. I think the neuroplasticity concept of how our thoughts, if they become so regular, that just fall into, you know, the why can't she type thing when you see a messy room or why, and that it's hard to change that or move the wheel or whatnot. So one of the things I'm going to try to do is saying, okay, rather than the reacting, why can't she, is more she's having some functioning challenges, things like that. Or when she's rude, instead of saying, oh, my gosh, she's so rude, it's saying, it's hard for her. I like that because it's an easy, it's a short little phrase that I think is easy to say, and will hopefully then we'll be able to control my own emotions, and so that's good.
Cool. Awesome. Love that. Is that what's going to be your reminder to focus in on this for the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think it just, I mean, there certainly will be times when I see something and I react first to say, why can't she? And I'm going to try to pause for a second and say, she's just having challenges and maybe step away, or she certainly will roll her eyes or do something, snarky, as you say, and I'm just going to try to say, don't talk to me like that. That's not polite. It's just to slow down myself and saying, hey, it's hard for her to, and just, again, put a little space and time into it. So,
love that. Cool.
This is Jennifer. I think my aha and what I focused on most was that neuroplasticity and just I'm going to really work on replacing my thoughts that I have and really work on stepping back. And instead of the instant thought of, oh, why can't you do this? It's easier. Why are you having a hard time? Just, have already run through those through my head. So I have thoughts to replace if one of those negative thoughts come back up. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's going to make that easier for you?
I think just spending time thinking and focusing and rereading stuff up about, what he can and cannot do. And, kind of put them in line of what I want him to do. And then how can what I want and what he can do equal out? Because what I want him to do and what he can do are totally different. So I need to make sure that I spend some time getting them both, on a level playing field, so to speak.
Hmm. So, what's kind of the first step for you to begin to do that?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Just rereading a lot of stuff and thinking especially the past couple weeks where we've struggled with, homework and you've got to do this or finish your study guide, study all this. Because it's all fresh in my mind. But, I come up with something sooner rather than later. So it's I can easily replace it when my brain latches on to my old thinking. I can, automatically have something there to replace it.
Right. Yeah. Love that. And it's a baby step. I mean, this is, like I said, for most of us, we've created this habit over, many years. So, cool. Who's next?
this is Kathy, and I'm going to focus on saying she's having a hard time being respectful right now. I think that's really helpful. And I'm going to actually enlist my 14-year-old to look at triggers with me. That's my point.
Cool. Anyone else? One more? Or did I get all four of you? I've counted three, but then I might have hit four. Anybody not
no.
check out yet?
You didn't get me. I'm not sure. Okay. So I think my aha was really when you're helping me talk about what I'm going to take aim on is to really realize that my son is super stressed out right now. And sort of going in line with what everyone else was really talking about today in terms of the neuroplasticity is, and triggers and all that stuff is when, since he's stressed out and his executive functioning skills and his impulse control specifically is probably not at its best, just to not allow his response to trigger me. And how I'm going to do that is self-talk and just remembering this conversation that we had today. And then also, you know, just trying to, we already have a pretty comfortable environment. You know, it's not like a difficult place for him to be home, but maybe make it an even, like a more fun place. And, you know, I'm going to try to spend some more time with him and, you know, play ping pong or play basketball or, you know, do something to help him just sort of forget about all of those things that are stressful and not giving him like a to-do list like, okay, well, you know, have you figured out what you're going to do this summer yet? Have you, you know, just not sort of questioning him right now and just sort of give him the space that he needs to deal with the stress that he's feeling in his life.
How will that make it easier for you?
I think if I help create an environment where he's having fun and I'm having fun with him, you know, and we're not, you know, he's not getting upset with me or my husband and yelling at us and giving us a hard time, I think that he'll just relax a little bit more and that'll make me feel better because, you know, you hate to see your kid not really happy and not responding to seemingly simple questions in the manner he's been answering them lately because it's really not the kid who he is. He's usually a little bit more easygoing. So, I just got to realize that he's going through a hard time.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Any parting thoughts? Thank you for a great call today, ladies.
No,
it feels like I want to write an article about neuroplasticity, I think.
Yeah. Diane?
Yes.
I tried to go online to pull up past calls that I've missed, the last two of them, the failing forward and the non-judgment. And when I try and download it or I try and list, I get an access denied error.
Okay. Let me look and see. Let me check real quick with you. Can you stay on the phone for a minute and let me see what I'm getting when I try to do it?
Yeah.
Are you able to log into this section?
Yeah, I can log in. I don't have any problem. I've got to run. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.
Everyone.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.